In this tape, I will be going further into the causes of sexual unhappiness, how to deal with sexual problems, and how to get your lovemaking right, which means making love without emotion. In love without emotion, there are no love problems. What is emotion? What am I talking about? Let's get it straight. Emotion is the living substance of the past, what you believed in and what you were in the past. It's your self. It lives on in your subconscious. It's not you now, the intelligence listening now in the present, but it's there now, just under the surface of your awareness. And it will rise and take over your relaxed intelligence the instant you are reminded of someone or something in the past which disturbed you or caused you pain. Let me demonstrate. Say, in listening to this tape now, you are reminded that you're unhappy in your relationship with a partner or lover. That emotion is the past, relating to the way he or she hasn't loved you enough in the past, or how they spoke to you or misunderstood you even a minute ago. A minute or second ago is the past. So your intelligence gets distracted from the present enjoyable act of listening and relates or reflects on the past, and you feel unhappy in yourself. It's yourself, the past, that is unhappy, not the intelligence in the present. Whenever you are resentful, depressed, angry, or jealous, you are feeling the emotional substance of yourself in the past. And because your intelligence identifies with it, you become your past self and repeat the behavior of all those old emotions, often much to your intelligent distress. You even wonder where the emotion comes from, arising so instantaneously too. Well, that's your past hurt self, reacting as pain to the present. So you lose the present, which is actually your presence. In short, you lose your presence. Your emotional self is always trying to come back and live on in you, to take you over and use you as it always has done. When your words or feelings come from the past, from the recall of any hurtful moment before now, you are being emotional. You are not straight, not yourself. So you can't be love or make love to your full potential. All this means that you can only make love in the present, when you haven't lost your presence. So the first step is to learn how to leave yourself behind and not allow it to enter and spoil the lovemaking. Much easier said than done. And here's the reason why. The substance of every past sexual emotion you've ever had, both the excitation and the pain, has accumulated in your genitals and lodged there, or in that part of the brain that controls them. It gathers there as unsuspected tension, as the desire to repeat pleasurable experiences and to avoid repeating hurtful ones. In women, the tension manifests physically as a subtle tightness in the vagina and sometimes as an acute tightness. Psychologically, it produces involuntary thoughts and emotions associated with past sexual pleasure. This may drive the woman to masturbate. The self-ish emotional pleasure of masturbation, in which there is no love or man to contend with, joins the vaginal tension as the desire to repeat itself, and so the habit is perpetuated. In man, the effect of all his past unresolved sexual emotions, the pleasurable and the painful, is a hardening of the penis in the act of making love. The penis, when erect, should be firm but not hard. Since a hard penis is likely to draw to itself a similarly hard or tense vagina, the woman may not be able to tell the difference. Such a woman may be so attuned to sexual excitement that a firm and loving penis can hardly be felt. Or it may be so out of synchronization with the excitable vagina that either it refuses to erect or will repeatedly withdraw, refusing to remain inside. The hardening sexual tension in man also expresses itself as involuntary erections. In both sexes, This genital tension causes restlessness, heaviness, and discontent. Every vagina, until loved rightly, is an emotional vagina, relatively stiff, muscly, expectant, self-guarding, and narrowly receptive. Though the actual vaginal tension may be imperceptible to the woman, she will feel the effect in the play of her emotions. A vagina used by many emotional men starts to react like the emotional penis itself. It becomes hard, greedy, and predatory, and concentrates on orgasm. When a vagina is sexually hungry like this, very little awareness of love is generated in the woman herself. She feels love within like any other woman, but when intercourse begins, the love is swamped by the pleasure of the excitement or the drive for orgasm. The pleasure, being based on temporary emotional satisfaction, produces deep inner unhappiness. She may have been promiscuous. It was only her desperate search for love. Or she may have had only one previous lover. But still her vagina will respond to whatever energy man has put into it. The purifying process in the vagina starts through contact with a penis that has not surrendered to the selfish drive of sex, but has served love and developed sufficiently in consciousness. The vagina, freed of emotion, becomes yielding, soft, giving, simple, easy, undemanding, and still. Then, to the woman, the love-making is sweeter and more fulfilling. It is effortless and natural and beautiful, with the emphasis on beauty, since beauty is the divine culmination of the simple pleasure of making love. The vagina is essentially passive and innocent, the organ of love. It learns all its bad habits from the male. The penis is the guru or teacher of the vagina, for better or for worse. At birth, the female psyche is love innocent, open during a girl's early years, and absorbing every influence of love and sex in the family and the wider world. And with so much past in the species, the vagina is potentially emotional from infancy. Every girl, as she grows up, psychically absorbs some of the sexuality and sexual frustration of her father, brothers, and other male relatives, boyfriends, and the male-dominated media and society around her. Later, after puberty, the vagina's emotional potential is actualized, and every girl falls into the normal and predictable problems of love. Love nourishes her psyche, but the projected sexual influences lay a patina of mental excitation over the love. At a very early age, this causes her to fall into romantic sexual imaginings and daydreaming, the reciprocal of which is fear. Even before the penis touches her, the virgin vagina is tense with emotional fantasies, excitement, and immature sexual experience, such as petting, masturbation, and fingering by boys. As soon as she comes into contact with male sexuality, she is contaminated by the seed of discontent and immediately disillusioned by man's lack of love. The first time she is penetrated, the pain may keep her momentarily in the present, but she will soon dream off into the past, into emotion and fantasy. It is ignorance of love in the world that maintains this basic tension in all girls and in every virgin vagina. Once, when time and the human race were very young, every virgin girl understood love because she was love. There was no ignorance of love in her consciousness, as there was no emotion in her vagina. Her lack of physical experience did not cause tension because she understood love before she made it. Now the virgin no longer understands love or herself. There are no real teachers, gurus, able to instruct her before wrong impressions are formed in her by unhappy sexual experiences, and no society loving enough to permit this fundamental education. With no understanding of love, the virgin imagines what physical love is, and that generates the tension the vaginal emotion, even hysteria. As the years go by and her experience grows, the tension accumulates. Most women's experience of lovemaking contains repeated disappointment. Most men's experience consists of automatic excitement at the prospect of ejaculation. Between woman's fears, reservations, and hopes, all based on past experience, and his dancing excitement, also based on past experience, there is very little chance of real love being made between them in the present, the here and now. So more emotion than love will be produced. By trying to repeat a good sexual experience like coming, you make yourself expectant or emotional. And by trying to avoid the repetition of a bad experience, you make yourself emotionally wary and cautious. In neither condition can you make love. The alarming truth, which is not realized, is that the emotion produced in what was supposed to be lovemaking will surface within a few minutes, hours, or days, and cause a bout of depression or discontent, particularly in woman. In man, the emotion will surface as irritability, anger, or aggressive behavior, and he probably will release it further with masturbation. The penis is only really happy when erected inside the vaginal profundity of woman. Erected in the emptiness of space outside the vagina, the penis is impatient, excitable, and emotional. In this unnatural state, it is naturally regarded by society as obscene and often as threatening. This is because the penis erected outside its natural vaginal home is a projection of sexual aggression. For all men, such an erection is demanding and discomforting. Frequently, he will have to masturbate to release the pressure of its misplaced, lonely existence. We are all sexually loaded, ready to go off emotionally as soon as intercourse is a possibility. Sexual emotion is there inside you now. It is waiting to take a man over and erupt as premature ejaculation or sexual selfishness at the first opportunity. Especially if he is a man who studies pornographic magazines and videos or suggestive pictures. It is waiting to take over every woman with a bad sexual experience, for every broken love affair is still inside her. It is not possible to name or know all past experiences associated with sexual emotion stretching back to childhood. They have coalesced into one deep, dark complex that is far too complicated and obscure to ever be defined. So how do you rid yourself of it, so that you can begin to love rightly? What can you do? Where do you start? You remove the emotion from yourselves in the approach to lovemaking. You make love without excitement, expectation, or imagination. You have to be very present, very aware, and conscious of everything you do as you come together. I suggest you engage in only minimal foreplay, or even none at all, because that will help you to realize, as a new conscious experience, that only the penis and vagina together make love, nothing else. All else is imagination and an avoidance of the responsibility of love now. This is the simple truth that man and woman have forgotten. They show they've forgotten it by continuously getting carried away with the imaginative substitutes for love. No matter how many delightful love stories you read or hear, how many erotic movies you see, or what sex games you engage in, the magic and romance between you and your lover still fades, because all those substitutes for love dull the perception and prevent you from staying with and facing the simple truth, the reality of love now. It is the imagination that takes you out of now. The imagination that man developed in building his world. On the wings of imagination he takes off and leaves his body, the earth, his love and woman. And as she is also addicted to imagination, she flies off after him. Foreplay feeds the imagination and prevents you from being with the reality of love now. If you see the truth of what I am saying, it will be a mighty moment in your life. For a man or woman who are being themselves, all the normal social flirtations and passionate petting before lovemaking are a way of avoiding direct responsibility for love now. Sex games are like a stiff whiskey, a dose of the wrong spirit to try to get our courage up, or a drug to help us forget what we're doing, because we're not prepared yet to face up to the reality that love is made now, not in some imagined future. So as is usual in the man-made world, the truth is the reverse of what's accepted and practiced. The world plays games and doesn't make love. The truth is, make love, and you don't need to play games. There is no love in imagination. Why do you need the imagination anyway? To get in the mood? To get an erection? Nonsense. You just think you need it because of a habit most of the world has got into through lack of love and understanding. It's a very difficult habit to break, but you've got to do it. You don't need your imagination to make love, because you are with the real thing. The actual living man or woman gives you the most delicious, pleasurable sensation that you can have, in the flesh and not in the mind. The people of the earth have been hoaxed by the imagination. Down through the ages, children and adults have been masturbating and making love in the imagination, unaware that the imagery is utter self-delusion and a cruel addiction. Because everyone indulges in the same drug, its loveless escapism is considered normal, and even necessary without being considered at all. Let me anticipate a question that will arise in many men. How do you masturbate without imagination? You, the adult, can't. When you cease imagining and fantasizing about love, the masturbation stops. The imagination is the habit, not the masturbation. The imagination stirs the sexual emotionality like a whirlpool, and that momentum drives you to masturbate. If you have to masturbate, and the pressure to do so is intense, particularly in the male, use as few images as you can. Don't use faces. No one ever made love to a face except in their imagination. If you are a man, use only the image of the female genitals. Get the images down to that alone, because that is the closest to the actuality. Wean yourself from the habit by not thinking or lusting after the opposite sex, and the impulse to masturbate will gradually disappear. You can get yourself off the global drug of sexual imagination. Start now. Be in your senses. Be out of your mind and in your body. Be where you are. Be responsible. But if you do masturbate, don't feel guilty and don't allow your children to feel guilty if they confide in you. Guilt distorts the personality in both the young and the adult. The error is not in the act of masturbating. It's in the misuse of the imagination, not only during the act, but more importantly during the rest of the normal daily activities, when the mind is allowed to roam wherever it pleases. The compulsion to masturbate is almost universal today. It arose in the evolutionary past, from the instinctive male drive in all animal species to mate and reproduce. In the case of the human animal, the addition of self-consciousness allowed reflection on its own organism, behavior, emotional reactions, and memory. This faculty was denied the rest of the species, but it has its downside. In man and woman, it produces guilt and self-doubt. The male monkey in the zoo masturbates with outrageous detachment and lack of guilt. Unlike man, he couldn't care less. That's because he can't see himself, can't imagine. The monkey only feels. But he can't feel he feels, can't know it. So the monkey can't make love. The power to make love, which man alone possesses, is the self-reflection that distinguishes him from the rest of the animal species. However, when he misuses this unique creative gift by reflecting on past sexual images and past emotions, he taps back into his animal past, into the mechanical animal drive, and masturbates or mates without love. He is then unhappy. If the monkey had the creative power to make love, he would see himself masturbating and feel wretched too. But his only option is to masturbate or reproduce. I've only seen monkeys masturbate in captivity, not in the wild. Since man is the captive of his mind, and not yet the master of his imagination, he masturbates. The question of impotence. Impotence is not necessarily a sign of physical deterioration or masculine deficiency. Healthy young men suffer from it. Nor is the cause psychological, due to fear, as some therapists may claim. Fear is not the cause. Fear is an effect. Where there is no physical impairment through ill health, disease, or damage to the penis, the cause of impotence is selfishness. Impotence arises from the unwillingness to truly love woman physically, unless there's something in it for yourself, unless you feel like it or think it's your duty. All of these reasons are excuses for not being able to love. Whether you feel like it or don't feel like it is irrelevant. In love, you love simply for the beauty of loving woman. Impotence has become an excusable condition of our times, particularly in busy men and older men. It's an acceptable feature of man's stressful, unhappy life today, catered for by a medical profession that suffers the same stress and unhappiness. The whole male society is in the same condition of selfishness, so no one offers the true diagnosis or real cure, and all are excused for failing to take responsibility for love. Impotence is caused by lack of love. However, since an erection may be induced through excitement, failure to erect can also be due to lack of emotionality. When men get older, they are more likely to have difficulty getting an erection because living has knocked some of the emotional excitement out of them. And by then, in lovemaking, there's so often not enough love in their bodies or in the woman's. The penis will not become erect without either sexual emotion or love. Often when couples become physically bored with each other and have intercourse out of a sense of duty, there is neither the emotional drive nor enough love or consciousness between them, so the man will not be able to get an erection. If the man has emotional drive but no love, he will have no trouble. He will induce his erection by emotionality or sexual aggression. An emotional penis becomes erect to gratify itself and doesn't need love to have sex, as every woman knows. So it will probably be a one-sided affair, although if the woman can get herself in the same condition, which she can do due to her induced maleness, the couple can gratify each other, but it won't be love. When a penis is responsive to love and not emotion, it becomes fully erect only inside the vagina or just before entering it. A loving vagina has no difficulty admitting a loosely full, loving penis, which then immediately becomes firm, authoritative, and erect for the purpose of love. However, if the woman starts dreaming off, or is sexually demanding, there may not be enough love in her vagina to sustain the erection, especially if the man is endeavouring to purify himself. This man does not use the imagination, but finds sufficient stimulus in the moment and the woman he is with. He does not become disturbed by a temporary loss of erection. He is patient and waits, available for the moment when love returns. Premature ejaculation. The main physical problem in lovemaking is man's premature ejaculation. and woman unsuspectingly contributes to it. The man who comes prematurely has temporarily lost the will to love, has lost himself, therefore cannot take the complete surrender of woman, and is without real authority. He knows it and is shamed by it. The only valid authority man can have over woman is through love, and that authority she will concede to him unconditionally when he demonstrates sufficient love to accept and take her total surrender. Only what he can take can she give. His trumped-up economic and physical authority over her during the last few thousand years has been a nasty bit of work, getting even with her for his own weakness, the abdication of his true authority. As selfless and munificent as a truly loving woman can be, the tragic division between her and her lover goes on from generation to generation because man has forgotten himself, forgotten how to love, and woman cannot give herself, cannot reach her natural fulfillment without him. Premature ejaculation is caused by excitement and anticipation in both the man and the woman. This is there before any foreplay, and long before the physical act begins. In man there is continuous pre-sexual excitation, a heightened aggression due to normal sexual fantasizing. He keeps the basic level of aggression relatively high through his obsession with sex, thinking about sex, reading about sex, joking and talking about it with other men, slyly alluding to it in mixed company, looking at women in public, consciously lusting after them, and making habitually unconscious sexual connections with them. He continually maintains and excites the sexual emotion. So his sexual thermometer is normally registering, let's say, 25 degrees of emotion. By contrast, woman is normally only at, say, 5 degrees. Woman is basically less aggressive than man because she is not basically obsessed with sex. Because man is sex-obsessed, he is ready for sex at any time, unless his numerous hang-ups and inhibitions get in the way. Woman is not, unless she is truly in love. For her to want to make love, her normal sexual temperature has to be raised. In the foreplay before intercourse, flirting, touching, kissing and the fondling of breasts and genitals raises the sexual temperature of both parties. When this excitement is added to the normally raised level of stimulation in the man, it makes him fantasize much more than her. So his sexual temperature rises at a faster rate. By the time he's close to entering her, he is at a burning 99 degrees and rising rapidly with expectation and impatience. She is at a comfortable and enjoyable 70 degrees and rising too. Sometimes she has only to open her legs to him, his fantasy image realized, and he ejaculates. Or his penis merely touches her, or just penetrates the lips of the vagina. Or he might actually manage to get inside the vagina before he comes. In seconds, his sexual temperature drops from a feverish 100 degrees plus to nil, as he selfishly ejaculates himself back to the rare state of cool, selfless absence of wanting. Woman's contribution to the premature ejaculation of the man is subtle, and you'll have to examine what I'm going to say closely in your own experience to grasp or test the truth of it. It's not something that all women experience, so if it's not the truth for you, don't imagine or invent it for yourself. In the young vagina, the insufficiently loved vagina, and the excitable vagina, there is a particular response to the penetration of the penis, a downrush of energy from the upper body, a spasm of repressed love. As a surge of love, it's meant to draw the penis up into the highest part of the vagina towards the womb. But even the practiced lover may feel it as a sudden, intense wave, and the shock or force of it draws the sexual emotion out of him, and he ejaculates. As the woman learns to release her love gently and smoothly in the vagina, the pressure on her partner to orgasm is eased, and as he in turn practices reducing his sexual excitement, the problem of premature ejaculation diminishes. As far as man is concerned, ejaculation usually marks the end of the act. But even if he has brought her to orgasm, a selfish lover will still not have collected her finer energies. Her orgasm will have released or dispersed her immediate sexual emotion. But the higher divine energies that remain uncollected will eventually degenerate into emotional demand and discontent. All emotion in woman is the demand or the cry to be truly loved, not used as a sexual spittoon. But woman, thank God, is love. Love is her true nature underneath all the emotions, notions, and hang-ups. If she loves him, or if she just loves, she can bear the sexual disappointment. Woman at every level represents the mother, the true archetypal female, Mother Earth, in which all of us delight and find our pleasure, even if only via the whiskey made of earth's grain and water. Man is like a child to the boundless love in true woman, which every woman, underneath her unhappiness, knows herself to be. In her love, she can forgive him for coming and nullify her own desire. She can absorb the restless energy of his orgasm, holding him there inside her, boyish and new in his brief moment of peace. For woman, the fulfillment of her love is to take him into her, to take everything he can give and everything he is, while in return offering up every bit of herself in sweet, complete surrender to love. When he comes prematurely, he is not mature enough to give her all of himself. He hasn't got the time. So she in turn is unable to give him all of the love she has to give. By coming, he goes. He leaves her. Because of it, he is a little less a man, and she is a little less the woman she is. In the greater story of man and woman, and their struggle to be united, this man and this woman are a little further apart. When woman loves, she can dissolve in herself most of the frustration caused by man's premature ejaculation. Nonetheless, any residual emotion becomes a part of the fiendess and will crucify him tomorrow. But her love cannot compensate for her basic unfulfilled need, to give up her finest female energies to her lover, to express her intrinsic female beauty, the divine fragrance which builds up continuously in every woman, and which is behind man's need of her. Because of his default, she has to carry this unnecessary burden, and the pain of it is the deep grievance behind the punishing moods and emotional fury of the fiendess. Selfish sexual man normally uses the act of love to ejaculate, to release his pent-up psychic aggression. In his so-called lovemaking, he habitually uses the woman for his own sexual gratification. In extreme cases of sexual aggression, man can possess the woman with a devilish sexual energy. He trains her to excite him to fever point, so that in intercourse she becomes a gyrating robotic performer. During the act, he contains his orgasm by rigid mental control, a practiced and efficient hardness derived from his sense of power over the woman. He enjoys being able to degrade her, to degrade love with excitement, a devilish pleasure. He enjoys the manipulation of her more than he enjoys orgasm. The woman, with a chronically excited vagina, lined with male sexuality, then becomes what she hates. She becomes 25% sexual male. I said that the man in this case is devilish. But I must also say that no individual man is all devil. All men have their moments of being love. The devil is a psychic possession in the subconscious, and in that sense it is the man, but it is not the man all the time. Man must learn to make love without being selfishly sexual. As he learns to love or enjoy woman without needing an orgasm to release his sexuality, he starts to love her rightly. He delights her, and delights in her, rather than aiming to excite her and himself. Man learns to make love rightly in this way by reducing his normal male level of sexual excitation, and he does this by cutting out sexual fantasy. It is possible to fantasize about sex but not about love. In love, the still image of the beloved is held in the consciousness. No movement, no thinking, just the energetic presence of the love. When fantasy takes over, and erotic moving pictures take on a life of their own, love is deserted for the male-induced mentality of the sex shop. Woman, as a rule, does not fantasize about sex as much as man, because sex is not as gratifying for her. It only serves to gratify the sexual excitement man has put into her. Woman knows deep down that love is not sex. Her main fault is that from childhood she fantasizes about romantic love and daydreams of mythically amorous situations. The selfishness of man's actual physical loving of her collides violently with this entrancement. Very soon she subconsciously acquires emotions of disappointment, disillusionment, and frustration with man's idea of love. But what can she do? When experience shows her that there's nothing else but sex and selfishness, that love is apparently a dream. So she joins man in his fantasizing, his dream, and leaves her dream behind. The suppression festers in her as doubt, fear, and in extremes, a subconscious hatred of man for his failure or betrayal. Man can never be happy for long until he has made sufficient love to replace his selfish attachment to sexual games playing and sexual entertainment. Since world progress is his own clever invention to escape this responsibility, he has devised almost foolproof contraception methods, chemical, the pill, surgical, vasectomy, to ensure the service of his own pleasure at the expense of love. The downside of this, there's always a downside to selfish pleasure, is the unstoppable burgeoning of the world population. The need to control the birth rate on the planet arose only because man lost sexual control of himself, releasing sperm when he masturbates outside the vagina and ejaculating inside as a matter of course. When time and the world were very young, and man and woman made love like gods, it was a great privilege to be present in the body on earth. Since man was responsible to love or woman, the population was kept very small. Man did ejaculate in lovemaking, but very rarely, and the moment was determined by the divine intelligence, love itself, with which he was united. Man and woman today can enter the consciousness of love, which lies behind the part of the brain that controls the genitals. This is done through right loving, by being the feeling in the vagina or penis, by not trying to stay aloof or hold on to a separate identity. Then the two poles of love on earth, the masculine and the feminine, are united in the magical consciousness, the divine presence of their mutual Godhead. There are two different energies of love, one in the upper body and one in the lower. The upper body vibrates with a very fine energy, felt particularly in the solar plexus, and if you are a woman, in the breasts. This is the finest and sweetest of her psychic energies of love. This love gives milk to the child and holds its beloved to the bosom without taint of sexuality. It can be felt as longing for the unattainable, yearning for purity and ideal beauty. It is the impulse behind the idea of platonic love. This is the upper pole of love. The lower pole, below the waist, is focused in the genitals, although the energy of it is continuously present, and normally not discerned, in the lower back, base of the spine, thighs and legs. If you are very still, you will eventually locate the distinct feeling of this energy. When perceived without emotion or sexual associations, the lower energy is felt to be just as pure as the higher love, but the sensation is more grainy or tangible. This energy, rising out of the earth itself, is pure vitality or life force before emotion as sexuality or sentiment enters it. In very few men or women is the body above the waist integrated with the body below it. The function of man or the masculine principle is to unify these two poles of love in woman. Although there is the same lack of integration in him, he has only to focus on loving and delighting his partner. Everything will flow from that, including the resolution of his own sexual disharmony and frustration. The kissing of the woman's breasts and nipples is extremely important. They require a very gentle and loving physical approach by man. Many men are greedy, grabbing, and even violent in their fondling and kissing of the breasts. Instead of adding to the woman's loving response, this behavior destroys the sensitivity in her breasts, and she stops feeling the love in them. When woman's whole system flows freely, she is fulfilled with divine love. For this union of the upper and lower in the body, the ideal and the earthly, the unattainable and the attainable, produces the single current of divine love, a radiant golden energy. And when this is fully achieved, women are reunited with the original woman, physically, psychologically, and spiritually. Her discontent vanishes, and she is no longer dependent on any external activity for a sense of fulfillment or purpose. She may still engage in her work or art, or motherhood, but is no longer attached to her pursuits as a need. All possible fulfillment is in this one yoga or union. As you can see from the world around you, it is rare indeed for a woman to be in this natural, original state. Yet woman's total sexual motivation is to make this divine connection through man. Even her desire to produce children is secondary. Because the divine connection is so rarely made, woman today is not really herself. She stays mostly in the romantic upper body, yearning for the unattainable, and periodically or promiscuously engaging the lower body in sex in a futile endeavor to make the connection. It evades her, so she remains virtually two people, divided in herself, until quite often, in disillusionment or old age, she cuts off from sex and lives a half-life of idealized love. In some extreme cases, she will be called frigid. In other cases, her cutting off will exacerbate the tendency in man towards impotence. To see through the sexual problems associated with this lack of integration, you have to see that in divine or real love, the union is not only of man and woman in their two bodies, but of each of them within their own bodies. The tendency in woman to remain in her yearning makes her vulnerable to sentiment and false romance. True romance is not a passing thing. It is not a box of chocolates, an anniversary remembered, or sweet words, pretty things, and beautiful evenings together. Indeed, these are a part of the romance of living, but so is death, which robs woman of all her romantic illusions. In the romance of living, you can't have the good without the awful shock. True romance is the myth of life, the stupendous adventure of man and woman discovering together through love, through each other, that there is no death, no end to life or love that does not hold or fear. Now let's look at what happens at the moment of orgasm. Orgasm is a part of lovemaking. But all too often, orgasm is an emotional end, and lovemaking has no end. True lovers go on and on, making love until finally, perhaps hours later, the man ejaculates naturally and consciously. Or they pull apart and make love hours later, or the next day, and the next, without the man necessarily having to come. The emotional end to orgasm is a letdown, a period of post-coital sadness or depression. Before the troublesome emotions of the self are dissolved, physical intercourse stirs deep emotions of self-doubt. But know that this is so and is actually part of the spiritual process of facing yourself in order to know yourself. Most people miss the significance of post-coital depression and identify with it instead of gradually detaching from it. Orgasm is well and truly beneath the moment-to-moment beauty and purpose of lovemaking, but it will happen rightly for both of you without producing emotional traumas afterwards, if you are present enough to concern yourselves only with making love. For man to come before he's made enough love, before he gathers his partner's divine energies, is gluttony. In woman, coming is easy and natural, sweet and becoming, if she can transcend her self-protectiveness, and if only her partner can give her the chance to be natural and come naturally. But man is often too selfish. Down through the ages in his sexual greed, he has taught her, tricked her into chasing the orgasm to divert attention from the lovemaking he cannot give her. You cannot be aware of the sensation of love if you are chasing an orgasm, or in the case of a man, if you are trying to delay one. And a woman who believes orgasm is important but can't seem to have one will feel deprived or guilty, and she might give up. Many women have turned away from lovemaking because they confuse love with orgasm, and they turn their backs on the real wonder and glory of love. When woman stops trying to make love and is no longer lured or fooled by orgasm, when she refuses to have a greedy penis inside her and is pure and present herself in lovemaking, with not one thought in her head, the orgasm can come, naturally and effortlessly. It just happens beautifully, through the power of the loving penis deep inside her. The orgasm comes of itself, without either partner wanting it or trying for it, or it doesn't come, and that's no problem. These days women can have an orgasm and hardly feel it. The consciousness of love in very many women has actually left the vagina. It is so riddled with past, with tension and emotion, that women can't fully get their awareness into it, especially up near the cervix. The vagina has been desensitized there, and it's getting worse with every generation. Woman generally gets more pleasure and more sensation in the lower part of the vagina, because man no longer has sufficient authority to get to the deepest or highest part, or stay there in love long enough to do what he is supposed to do. Because he cannot reach the part of her that is next to her spiritual garden, where the true goddess of love resides, he has fetched her feeling and her orgasm down to the front, and concentrated her awareness on the clitoris. He has done this in two ways: by persistent ejaculation immediately after entry, and by persistent stimulation of the clitoris with his fingers to compensate her for the orgasm she otherwise does not have. He has made clitoral satisfaction, clitoral compromise, the prize of lovemaking. She knows it is not love, but what else can she do? What else is there? Because of man's failure to love her properly, she will masturbate on the clitoris as man taught her. If she were loved, she wouldn't do it. Without man's influence, she doesn't have the same compulsion to masturbate as he does in the relief of his sexual aggression. She got the habit from him. Only the penis can really make love with woman, not the fingers or any other device. Only man's living penis is designed to serve her in the vagina. Only a selfless, passionate, patient, loving penis can put the orgasm back where it should be, where orgasm happens naturally, where if it doesn't happen there is no disturbing emotion, when she knows by the sensation, the consciousness in her vagina, that she is being loved. Eventually, through loving woman, a man's hands become like his loving penis. His whole body becomes love, and woman will recognize this if ever she encounters it. Then his hands can love her in love play as her needs require. This cannot happen until man, through years of right practice of love, has developed and realized his psychic senses. The psychic senses are behind all the physical senses and are far finer and perceptive. As man learns to love the smell of woman, he starts to actuate his psychic sense of smell. The same with his lips. As he kisses her body with increasing love, her hair, her skin, her breasts, his lips are endowed with a new dimension of communication. The same with his touch. It becomes a harmony, a flow. Finally, he realizes the whole psychic sense of sense. This is one sense instead of five, and his whole body becomes that refinement of powerful and penetrating love. Then, even his presence communicates love. For man and woman to make love beautifully and divinely requires a fundamental change in the penis and the vagina, or more specifically, in the part of the brain that controls them. The penis and the vagina have to be freed from the brain's ignorance of making love. They have to be consciously liberated from the emotion or unconsciousness of the past, from all the habits and misconceptions gained through attachment to past experience. Your body doesn't have to learn how to make love. It makes love naturally, given the chance. But your attachment to past experience gets in the way. This emotional attachment is yourself, the emotion of what you like and don't like, and all your attempts to repeat the pleasures and avoid the pain of past encounters. So yourself can't learn to make love. Instead, you learn to look after yourself in normal lovemaking. You learn how to protect and project yourself safely and astutely. This self-consideration turns love into sex. You can't protect yourself and make love. You can't hold back in any way. But that's how men and women make love these days. Their experience has taught them to be cautious, not to give all, or they might lose something, might get hurt. Fear is abundant, so they play safe. They don't know how to give all anymore. It's been forgotten. People in love so frequently feel the rending impulse to give everything, to want to tear themselves open, and yet they can't. You must have had that feeling at some time. It's yourself you want to tear open and be rid of, the blockage that blocks your love in your natural body. Would you be able to give your lover everything? Now, this moment? The honest answer is no. You have the chance each time you make love and you haven't managed it yet. Or have you? You may feel it does happen sometimes, or nearly happens. But there's always a chance that perhaps you won't be able to give yourself completely. There's no chance, no perhaps, in love. Lovemaking these days is a compromise. The acceptance of the best that can be hoped for or done in the circumstances. And it produces at best the best feeling that can be hoped for from compromise, and that is satisfaction. That's like being drugged. You'll notice it puts you to sleep after lovemaking. It is personified in the world by the man-made god of love, orgasm. Man is orgasm mad, and now woman, the goddess of love herself, infected and inflamed by this male madness, worships man's phony god, as if coming were a sign of love. Any animal can be made to come without a sign of love, but you can't make love without love. So let's not fool ourselves or be fooled any longer. If you want an orgasm, go and masturbate. If you want love, stay with this way of love. Persevere, and the necessary fundamental change in the brain will eventually be made. The fundamental change can only be brought about by learning to become conscious in love, by making love for love and not for yourself. This means being both psychologically and spiritually present during the act of lovemaking and preliminary love play. First, what does it mean to be psychologically present? Because of the massive accumulation of past or unconsciousness in everybody, you normally make love in a subconscious dream state. What happens is that rising sexual feelings excite the accumulated past experience of sexual pleasure in you and draw your attention or awareness back into the past as a mood, image, or fantasy. Immersed in that past, you cut out as a conscious being from the love your body is making in the present. Psychologically, you are absent from the event, no longer really with your partner. You have drifted off into a world of your own. You must have observed this in your lovemaking, possibly in yourself and particularly in your partner. Everyone making love is consciously present from time to time. In those moments, you may notice that your lover is in a self-contained private euphoria. He or she is clearly absent. It's like talking to someone whom you know is not listening anymore. So rather than remain alone, out in the cold, you get back into your own personal dream state as quickly as possible, so that you too can lose yourself with erotic imagery in dreamland. The purpose of lovemaking is to be present together in conscious physical union as man and woman. But your normal lovemaking is self-orientated, self-indulgent and self-gratifying. You are dream worlds apart. In effect, you have both borrowed the other's vagina or penis to make love to your own emotions, your own past. In such an insulated encounter, how could there possibly be a conscious, timeless union of the male and female principles? Because more emotion is being made than love, and since emotion is invariably isolating, such lovemaking gradually pushes the lovers apart. They get tired of each other and the magic vanishes. Lovemaking becomes habitual, a duty, or it is an emotional release like an outburst of anger. Misunderstanding, discontent, and restlessness grow. The existence of emotion or past in the genitals dramatically reduces the sensation and the pleasure. The more emotion or past, the more the feeling of love is numbed, and the more distant the perception of love's significance. Since every penis and vagina is more or less infested with selfish emotion, no one suspects that the delicious sensation normally felt in lovemaking has already been deadened and distorted. Therefore, no one looks for the joy that is naturally available in divine and selfless love. It's too unbelievable, too far outside the normal experience. It is towards this extraordinary original state of being that I am endeavoring to lead you. When the penis and vagina become free of emotion, they make ecstatic love. The sensation and perception is so heightened that at first there seems the possibility of losing consciousness because the pleasure is almost unendurable. As the process continues, the awareness is of being completely present as the consciousness of the divine love being made. There is no limit to the expanse of being and joy, and the immediacy of the spirit that is known to be the union. It is being in the divine presence, a union of each other. And because it is love alone that is being made, and not emotion or imagination, and as love, unlike emotion or orgasm, has no end, the same rapturous physical and spiritual delight is present in all subsequent lovemaking together. It does not vary. It has only ups and no downs, no moods, no confusions, no emotional disasters. It only gets better, finer, more divine and more real, more conscious and more present. And the perception of love, Godhead and eternal purpose becomes more wondrous, more sublime until ecstasy becomes beauty. As by now you will appreciate, this does not happen easily. A good deal of emotional and intellectual dying has to be done. It takes a lot of work on yourself and together. But the wonder of it is, it can be done. I have been describing what it is to be psychologically present in lovemaking. To understand what it is to be spiritually present, you have to understand the penis and vagina spiritually. for both are spiritual organs and together are the means of all love on earth. If love is God, if love is our own Godhead or the excellence of life, then the penis and the vagina are the means of that excellence. Every man and woman, every perception of love and beauty on earth, arises from the union of the penis and the vagina. Even homosexual love is a misapplied attempt to get back to the divine state where the male and female principles themselves are united, the state of union that transcends persons and personal love. To make love properly, man has to learn to be his penis during the act, to surrender to its greater intelligence instead of forcing his inferior, sex-obsessed emotional mentality upon it, with the result that the penis can't do the job it's supposed to do. The penis is the finest perceptive organ and instrument in the male body. It has a consciousness and awareness of its own. It is the positive, active organ of love on earth. It knows exactly how to make love and what to do inside the vagina. Even in normal, unconscious intercourse, the penis consciousness can occasionally take over, and the love-making is surprisingly good and right. But that, of course, is the exception, because the penis is normally used as an instrument of gratification for the man's emotional aggression and the woman's self-forgetfulness. The vaginal cavity represents the emptiness in woman, her eternal longing to be filled with love. The penis stands for the only love that can fill it, and until the penis is there, man and woman cannot be content. The penis inside the vagina symbolizes the filling of the enormous gap that has developed in time between the two sexes, the gap that created the world, and through which the world continues to come into birth. The vaginal channel into existence is then symbolically sealed. The cavity and its missing mass have found each other and are complete. When the act of union is complete, the search of the male and female wanderers in existence is at an end, or the need for existence is at an end. But life as birth and death goes on, for even in union the penis and vagina are doomed to separate. Above the place of union is the womb and will of creation. The womb or will, the source of existence, will not allow man or woman to rest for long together on the face of the earth. The womb or will can never be filled as the vagina can, for the womb demands birth and existence. So even as man and woman, penis and vagina, find rest and completion in each other, the womb sucks into itself the seeds of life, and another restless particle of life, another penis or another vagina, is born. Earlier I mentioned foreplay and love play. I want you to understand that foreplay is not love play. Foreplay is what people do to get each other excited before the physical act. It stirs fantasizing in the man and emotions of past sexual excitation in the woman. Foreplay, as the word indicates, is the caressing and working up that happens beforehand, before the sexual act. It implies something to look forward to that's not present now. Love play, on the other hand, is sufficient in itself. It is love, and love is the same in whatever way it is practiced. There is no looking forward because what is happening or being done is simply love now. If the sexual act follows, the quality of the love remains the same, although there may be a seemingly greater intensity. This means that in lovemaking, just as in love play, there is no looking forward to, say, an orgasm or an end. It is a continuum of moment-to-moment pleasure of being that has no future and certainly no past reference. Any past or future reference would be a thought, and in love play and the act of making love, there cannot be any thought. If there is, it's not love play, it's foreplay, and it's not lovemaking, but sex. Two things operate in the interaction of man and woman: the reality of the body and the unreality of the emotional self. Due to the sexual bias of society today, most men and women are so possessed by their emotions that they never make a real connection with the actual sensation of the body. They've lost the power to distinguish between body and self, or love and sex. So for most people, there's no distinction between foreplay and love play. Sensual stimulation is the same as sexual excitation. In foreplay, people excite their self or emotions. This selfish excitement is not sensory, not actual. It is a stirring up of past emotional experience and anticipation. There is no excitement or anticipation of the future in the body. The body is stimulated by the presence of love, but that stimulation does not have excitement in it. Similarly, in right lovemaking, when orgasm occurs, it's not exciting. It's a pure sensory intensity, not an emotional one. But most people emotionalize the sensation by interpreting it through their feelings. This is usually much less pleasure than they would actually receive through the direct sensation. They drink the water but miss the wave. This makes them discontented. As I've said, love is actually only made between penis and vagina. Love made has a very profound function. It actually reduces the excitement in the subconscious or self. As you continue the process of making love, engaging in a minimum of foreplay, you will reach a stage of knowledge that you are no longer as excitable or projective as you were in the beginning. A demonstration of this will be a noticeable decrease in both of you in what was once considered normal emotional behavior. Accompanying this will be a growing sense of stillness and peace, and an increasing subtle detachment from worry and anxiety in the everyday life. As this happens, it is possible you may engage in love play. But love play, you should know, is the rarest state of communication on earth. I am now going to speak about fellatio and cunnilingus. But again I must stress that these forms of love play lose their profundity as a means of love if they cause any excitement at all or any fantasizing in the man or woman. It's all a matter of consciousness, of being more conscious. Consciousness means absence of excitement, absence of wanting and trying, absence of projection, absence of self. In absence, consciousness remains. Consciousness is the power to register what's happening through the senses or body without using past experience to interpret it. This means that love starts to disappear as a feeling and is replaced by the direct sensation or knowledge of pleasure, a very rare state indeed. The way most people are today, the sensory pleasure is interpreted through the past and is therefore not conscious or immediate. Consciousness converts the physical act into something profound and spiritually meaningful, whereas lack of consciousness makes the act a coarser and more animalistic activity, which produces all the emotional disturbances and conflicts you see within you and around you. The power of consciousness is always towards realization of God, the Most High, the non-existent, and liberates the being from the old animalistic identification. Consciousness is holiness because there's no self in it, no personal gratification or self-motivation. Consciousness is what this whole teaching of love is about. So I must now speak to you from the point of consciousness, which is the God point, or love point, that you and everybody on earth are endeavoring to make real as your own being. In consciousness, woman represents the holy shrine, and man the holy worshipper of that shrine. Woman's genital organ is the shrine, and the vital power in man's penis is the worshipper. So we find in the experience of being human the compulsive need of man to worship at the shrine. His greatest desire is to get down on his knees before the shrine, to have the guardian pillars or thighs of the shrine open to him, and then, parting the curtain of the shrine, to gaze into its mystery. It's like the Ark of the Covenant. The Ark of the Covenant was a wooden chest the Israelites of old carried around with them through the desert. It's supposed to have contained the tablets of the Ten Commandments, and after they disappeared, the scrolls of the Torah. The chest was lodged behind a curtain. Only the high priest was permitted to part the curtain and enter, and when he opened the chest and looked inside, he found nothing. It was empty. Man, when he looks into the vulva, the physical representation of woman's mystery, sees the same. Nothing. But the nothingness is the power of the communication. If he can only look and see without using his imagination or identifying with the old animalistic desire. His next move is to experience the shrine with his other senses, to touch it, taste it, smell it, and finally through his holy instrument of full penetration, to enter it. All this should be done in worship, that is, in love that transcends every thought and feeling in the interchange of consciousness between the two. For as man looks and sees consciously, so does the female part look back at him in consciousness. He is looking into the eye of God in existence. This is where man and woman as separate beings vanish, and the mystical union of consciousness occurs. In touching the shrine, man's fingers may find their way into the vagina. This should be with a conscious knowledge of what he is doing. Animalistically, he does it because he's unconsciously moved to, and the act again serves to excite himself in the vagina with anticipation, rather than fill it with a sense of purpose or love now. To a man conscious of what he's doing, his fingers are an extension of his holy penis. The fingers can reach places in the vagina which the penis cannot. Their function is to stimulate the membranes and muscles of the vagina, and through them the bones of the cavity. His loving fingers help to remove the substantive build-up of tensional unhappiness that occurs in woman's consciousness, which, unbeknown to contemporary thought, is mainly centered in her genital organs. It is her pleasure to receive such love, his pleasure to give it. For woman, the holy power in man, the mystery, is in and behind the penis. From infancy she is attracted to its mystery and curious to know more about it. In maturity, she is drawn irresistibly to fondle the penis, to feel the power rising from deep within it, and finally to take it into her through her mouth in an action of sheer love and worship of the power. If the man is excited in indulging in any kind of mental connection with what's happening, his lack of consciousness will go into the woman's brain and reduce her consciousness. His energy, instead of reducing her thought and emotionality, will actually add to both. Woman is less given to fantasy than man, and this is evident for her in the practice of fellatio. Given the power, and not the excitement of the penis, the woman knows a great stillness. Her mind and emotions are absent. She becomes completely absorbed in the direct communication. Her self disappears. Although momentarily she may become aware of what she is doing, her identification with the act becomes less and less, and she enters the place of transcendent consciousness. Transcendent consciousness is registered as a vastness, a void, a blackness, or from the point of view of existence, as nothing. But it is real, has a quality of joy and fulfillment, and can't be remembered as anything in particular. I trust that you will go on playing these tapes and put what I have been saying into practice. Love or God can never be the subject of a philosophic exercise. Love or God is too real. Love or God is living and doing now, not speculating about it, not thinking about it. In these tapes I trust I have been real and down to the blessed earth, so that love and God are truly served in your understanding. Not only when you are making love, but now, when you have the opportunity to be all the love you've ever made. For now is every moment. By practicing together to make love rightly, without self-indulgence, without seeking emotional satisfaction and self-gratification, you will draw closer to the realization of consciousness or love itself and the conscious, timeless union of the male and female principles as one ineffable divine presence, realized as your own reality, the sublime, selfless spirit of love and life.